We here at Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures would like to begin by acknowledging that the Mi'kma'ki, that we are in Mi'kma'ki, the ancestral and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. This territory is covered by the Treaties of Peace and Friendship, which the Mi'kmaq and Maliseet people first signed with the British Crown in 1725. The treaties did not deal with surrender of lands and resources, but in fact recognized Mi'kma'ki and Maliseet titles and established the rules for what was to be ongoing relationships between nations.
We also want to honor and pay our respects to the 215 children whose remains were found on the property of the former Kamloops Indian Residential Schools last week. Residential school era is the dark chapter in Canada's history, with Indigenous families and communities continuing to experience multi-generational trauma as a result of this terrible system. This discovery hits close to home with many Indigenous peoples across the country and here in Nova Scotia who lost family and community members to the residential school system. We want our listeners to know that the National Indian Residential School Crisis Fund is available to provide support for those affected. Emotional and crisis referral services can be accessed by calling the 24-hour National Crisis Line at 1-866-925-4419.
In the words of the International Chief and former Commissioner of the Truth and Reconciliation Commissioner, Dr. Wilson Littlechild, it must be so painful not to only lose your child, but not know what happened to them and not be able to hold their ceremonies. Many people have unanswered questions about what happened. The work we commenced is far from over. Keep them in your prayers. Make the words true. Every child matters.
At the end of this podcast tonight, there will be 2 minutes and 15 seconds of silence for the 215 children who never came home.
So, formally, that's our acknowledgement. Tonight's episode is cordage, though. And we are going to be talking about natural cordages, materials you can use for cordage. Not necessarily natural, but things you may find in the woods. May even brush a little bit on some on natural cordage or purchase cordage. And we're also going to have Melissa come in after Lily gets down into bed and is done running around and such to kind of be our residential expert on this. If anybody has ever been to the Nova Scotia Bushcraft Gathering when myself and Melissa have been there, or Ben, and she has done, how many have you done now? You've done a couple courses on cordage making. So most people that have been there have at least seen Melissa, in passing at the very least, if not have attended one of her cordage classes. So it's kind of nice to have you come in and talk a little bit about this because it's something that you're actually pretty good at. Like, I mean, when Mel and I go out, the cordage making is generally her area of expertise, and I just try to struggle along and keep up.
I practiced a tiny bit, and I sat in on one of her classes, and it is a skill set that, I haven't perfected yet, but I do have a lot of respect for it, and it's something that, I think is worth talking a bit about, because it's a major tool. Anytime you're in the woods and bushcrafting and doing almost anything, the ability to make and use cordage is paramount to really enhancing the experience and maximizing what you can do.
No, that's completely true. And I mean, it goes greatly underappreciated how important cordage actually is, not only to being out in the bush and just enjoying yourself, but I mean, in a survival situation, it's incredibly important to know how to at least find cordage or potentially make some cordage. Because I mean, it's going to greatly increase your chances of getting a decent shelter made. If you have nothing, it's going to help you in fire making. And it's going to help you potentially make or create other tools, you know what I mean? Like, you could use, I mean, depending on what your skill level is, maybe a little bit more advanced than myself, for instance. But I mean, if you know basic cordage skills, you can make a bow, you can make a bow drill, you can, cordage skills and weaving skills go very close together. So I mean, it just kind of, it's a building block that leads to more.
Oh yeah. I mean, once you get cordage, the ability to potentially make things that would represent or similar to like cloths, to repair clothing, to make a raft. I mean, the sky's the limit is kind of the thing. You can use it for snares.
Fishing line.
Fishing line, traps.
Traps.
I mean, there's so much you can do with cordage. And that's the thing is, I think we all go with cordage, and we can talk briefly, I guess, about, like, cordages we love to take. I mean, everyone will talk about the paracord and the bank line. You get tarred bank line. You know, hollow rope, like the am steel I use on my hammocks and stuff. These are all great. But you have to have them. You have to, like, buy them at a store, and you have to bring them in. It's a lot to cart, and it's not impossible to lose, break, damage, or just simply not have enough. I don't know about you, but there's many a time I've gone and set something up, and I've been like, if I had 6 more inches.
Well, then. It's very true. And, I mean, it can even come down to as simple as, like, repairing a shoelace. A lot of people say, oh, yeah, you can just cut the other lace in half and you got enough to do both up. What happens if you break it a second time? You know what I mean? Like, now you're really down to the bare nitty-gritty. Or, as you said, maybe just you need to make something to strap something down on your backpack to make it that much more comfortable while you're walking in. Or often what Mel and I have done, like our bedrolls or something like that, you just lash them up and make handles on them. That way you're not trying to tie them to your bag or whatever. You can carry them independently of themselves.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is 100 usage for cordages out there. And anybody that's taken rope with them, I'm sure, appreciates it without actually realizing how much they're appreciating it.
Oh, I mean, having enough rope to do a job can sometimes be the difference between getting your gear out, getting it comfortably, getting it safely. It saved me quite a few times, having that extra piece of string or that extra piece of rope. So, you know, I think it's a great topic for the night. The big thing for me generally has been shelters. There's a good area. Me and you, I mean, and to say briefly spoke of this today would be a stretch. We threw it out pretty quick. And one of the things that I think we had mentioned was even, like, the canoe, like making the old
bird. Yeah. And that was something I never even thought about either. Like, you just don't realize how often it gets used.
No.
So we did talk a little about paracord and bank line, stuff like that. And like you said, those are great items if you have them purchased. Now, let's talk about natural materials a little bit, because everybody wonders, like, what makes the best cordage and stuff like that. And I know Mel is just putting Lily down now, so I'm sure she's going to come in and give her 2 cents here in 2 seconds. But I mean, a lot of people, sorry, let me backtrack a little bit. A lot of people don't really know what to use to make cordage. And there's, believe it or not, there's no shortage of stuff in the wild that will make decent cordage.
No.
I should have taken it in, but I didn't. I was going to say, even grass. Mel has made me cordage out of literal grass, like longer grass. But she sat there, she took her time, she weaved it out. And I mean, well, you can't see my hands in the picture, but 3-4 feet of that stuff. And it's strong, and it lasts a long time. How long's that cordage been hanging on the mirror of my truck now? 5 years, 6 years?
Yeah, probably.
And I mean, it's not usable per se now because it's dried out. But I mean, it's still holding together. If it had lashed something together, it would probably still be somewhat working. So anybody that is new to the channel, this is my wife, Melissa.
Hi,
and
guys.
As we said, she knows a little bit more on cordage than we do. It's kind of been one of her passions when it came to bushcraft. So we did invite her in to have a little chat on this. And what we're talking about now, Ben and I, we were talking about things that you can find in the wild that make decent cordage. And it's not, most people don't realize there are tons of things out there that can actually be made into cordage.
Yeah, so there definitely is. First of all, I'll backtrack and say that my focus is definitely natural cordage. That's kind of just really anything you find out in the bush. So for me, any kind of grasses, roots, some barks you can strip down, rushes, leaves. There's really kind of a wide variety of things that are potentially good cordage. Once you get a little more familiar with your foraging and your identification skills, you start to pick up on some other ones. You know, some are better than others. And really, honestly, don't stress about the scientific name of the tree that you stripped the bark from, unless that's your thing. If it works to make good cordage, great. If it doesn't, move on. I don't really harp on one thing's better than another, because like Robert said, I've literally made cordage, usable cordage, out of grass, like front lawn grass. I don't recommend it. It's probably not going to give you a very strong bow drill, but in a pinch or just for fun, it's a fun exercise in tediousness. But there are certain species, if you do kind of want to go that route, that are better than others. Some of the most common ones, at least here North America-wise, are like milkweed, nettles, hemp, flax, cattail leaves, and also the stalks can be split and stripped. Mm-hmm. Willow bark, maple bark, cedar, roots, straw, and like I said, a various variety of grasses. I'm not going to get into naming those because honestly, I don't really know them either. And then two of the other main ones that a lot of people forget that are included in natural cordage are sinews. So that would be like animal parts, and then also like horse hairs or other kind of like animal fur. Mm. So a lot of different things can be used.
I've often, like when I brush my dog, I'll do like the carding with the extra hair, and I've made like a foot long rope out of her fur, which is kind of fun to do.
But I mean, it just goes to show, like, literally anything can kind of become cordage. I've heard of, I haven't talked to anybody personally or, you know, anything like that, but I've heard of people making rope out of their own hair to get themselves out of binds. You know what I mean? Like, had to tie something up. The one I'm thinking of is somebody used hair to try and make a bow drill. I don't know what the success was on that because it was a story I read long ago. But I mean, it's just kind of one of those examples of literally it was a female. She had longer hair. She was in a bind. She needed to get a fire going. There wasn't anything around that was really creating decent cordage for her. So she literally used her own hair. She did a reverse wrap. I always want to call it reverse wrap two ply, but it has nothing to do with that. But anyway, it's a reverse wrap cordage. And I mean, she wrapped up a small thread. She did two of those. Sorry. Now, how'd she do it? She did it once and then did it a second time or something like that. Like, she did it real thin the first time, and then she went over it and did it a second time, and apparently it gave it wicked strength.
Hi, Steve. And he asked if braiding skills are the ticket. And I will say, I do braid very well. I can braid my own hair, and I braid my daughter's hair, and my sister makes me braid hers constantly. And I've made a lot of friendship bracelets in my day, so I do credit a lot of my cordage-making skills to those angsty teenage friendship bracelet-making days. Just saying.
How's your braiding skills been? Because I know mine are just... They're cheeks. They're absolutely no good.
I should have braided my hair for tonight.
Okay.
Well, do it while you're here.
I do tend to do my own, like, braid version on the back of a lot of my keys.
Hmm.
There's actually about 4 feet wrapped around a key. Mm-hmm. That's just with Nomex strings, so it's not natural cordage. But I can braid pretty good.
Yeah, I suck at braiding. I think that's why I rely on Melissa so much, is my braiding skills. I'm all thumbs, man.
True,
you're not supposed to. The support is absolutely phenomenal over here, as you can tell. Oh yeah, you suck. Just don't even try.
Like, less than 15 minutes ago, you sent Lily to me to get her hair braided. So.
Well, yeah, I'm not stupid enough to braid a human's hair. I'd be knotted. I'd be tied into it. The dog would be tied into it.
Yeah.
But anyway, we digress. So we did name a couple of types of cordages you can go there. And I guess the next, unless you got something to add into this, Ben, the next thing I would want to tread on is what you look for in the materials you're going to be braiding with. Because just because, for instance, you can say, oh, you can use cattail leaves or bulrush leaves or whatever you want to call them. Not all bulrush leaves or cattail leaves are created equal. Some of them are going to make really good cordage. Some of them are not going to make cordage at all. They're going to turn to powder. So there's specific characteristics you look for in the materials that you potentially want to make cordage out of that are, to me, and maybe you can weigh in on this, Mel, Ben, to me, it's more important to look for the characteristics that you need to make the cordage than focus on the specific item that the cordage should be made out of. You know what I mean? Like, it...
Correct me if I'm wrong, you're looking for, like, longer, strong fibers, right?
Yeah. And you want something, like me, I look for something with potentially a little moisture in it. You don't want it sopping wet, but you don't want it 100% dry either. Dry is going to fall apart. You're not going to be able to braid it. Sopping wet, it's going to lose integrity. There's kind of a sweet spot in between. And what's real good about it is if you get it and you braid it nice and tight, as it dries out, it's going to tighten up again. And we talked about this with the birch bark canoes and the spruce roots before we came on the show here.
Yeah.
So yeah, basically that's what I would say. The only thing I'll say is that there's some materials that once you strip, you have to dry. And then there's some materials that once you strip, you have to dry, and then you have to re-soak before you can use. Have to, again, is a strong term, because I'll literally make anything out of anything. But if you want to, you know, maximize your cordage capability, there are kind of processing techniques that come into play if you really want to start digging a little deeper. So if you're just plucking something fresh, like green growth off of something, and expecting to use that, then yeah, you're definitely looking for, you know, some flexibility, and you want it to have, you don't want it to be just like dry grass, obviously. You want it to have some moisture in it. For a lot of like barks, you want to strip and let dry and then re-soak for maximum, again, capability. And the other thing is that during the actual cordage making process, a lot of the time you want to kind of introduce moisture yourself as you go. So even if you're using a dried material or a green material that you've just picked, you may want to even just moisten your hands. Like a dipping bowl is really handy to keep your hands moist and your fingers moist while you're working. It'll just kind of improve not only the flexibility of the material you're working with, but also it just keeps your grip a lot stronger.
Ben?
Okay, there you go. That's everything you need to know. We're done. No.
I was going to say, you didn't leave a lot to the imagination on that.
No, I can picture that, though, because if it's something that's too wet, yes, could be slippery, but if it's too dry, it's also slippery. When you get that adequate moisture, you can, like, you know, it's kind of thing when you're trying to pull something with a rope, some people, like, spit on their hands. It's to get that extra bit of air.
Yeah, exactly. The moisture on your hands while you're working the material, regardless of kind of the condition of the material itself, definitely just by itself will improve your grip, and your twist strength will get like a lot stronger because you can really like, you can really give it, you know what I mean? You're without your finger just like splitting. Plus you'll do like a ton of damage to your hands sometimes too.
I was going to ask you, guys, I guess this is something you, as you do it, you're going to build up some calluses to some protection because, you know, me and Robert, we have some pretty baby soft hands, so we're going to be pretty sore after trying to do
this. For anyone listening on the podcast, Rob just like rubbed himself. You're welcome.
There's definitely some, if you're doing it all the time, some calluses that can be built up. Obviously, it's one of those things, because usually my go-to for everything bushcraft related is just grab gloves. Like, that's my number one tip for everyone, especially women. Just take some good gloves, because everything is just going to cut you. But when you're doing cordage, what are you going to do? You need the dexterity, and you need the grip, and you really need, like, that...
The textile feedback.
Yeah, you need to be able to feel how tight it's twisting and releasing. And so it's really kind of a bare-knuckle sport, and you will get some nasty, like, little fiber splinters, especially from the grasses. They do kind of tend to split and give you really, really sticky, prickly ones. And then there's also like some materials that you can harvest that are really hard on the hands. I mentioned nettles, I think. The stalks of nettles make excellent cordage, but you're going to have some nasty processing to do before that. So
I have seen, and maybe you can talk on this a bit, some cordage where they've steamed it.
Yeah, that would make sense, because it would be the same as, it would kind of defeat, you'd cut out, like, your drying, rehydrating process of, like, soaking. You could just, like, steam it right from the beginning. I have never done it, but, yeah, that would make sense.
I think I kind of know which, oh, sorry, Ben, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think I've seen it with spruce roots.
Hmm.
I was going to say spruce roots I've seen it with, and the other one that I've seen with is certain types of... Oh, somebody's going to correct me on this, but I'm going to say ash. Ash is a wood that the rings, like when you cut a tree and you look inside the rings, it has very prominent rings, and I know, and I think it's ash, and maybe I'm thinking elm. I'm not 100% sure in here, but one of those trees. Soaking it in water will actually cause the layers to separate, and when it's at a certain size, and I'm not going to pretend that I know exactly what that size is, because this is kind of getting out of my realm of comfortability, but I should really look into it. It's soaking, steaming it will actually separate those layers into almost paper thin layers to the point where you can split them, strip them, and rebraid them into cordage.
I usually do that by soaking, but yeah, that's totally the same process for sure. It'd probably be faster.
Mm-hmm. If you had the availability to steam something that long, or boil it, I guess, is more specifically. I've seen it in kiln drying, is where I'm thinking of it. Like, sometimes they would induce moisture to take warps out of wood and stuff like that before they kiln dry it. And certain types of wood, like, it would just start flaking off. Audio's 3 to 10, just FYI. Does he need to be turned up, Steve? Or what's going on there, Ben? They're saying that your audio is down a little bit. Maybe I have to turn you up on my end.
I
can crank you up here. All right, let's go with that. We turned you up to full blast. Sounds distant?
Maybe he was just sitting back too far from his mic. That happens.
Maybe.
I learned a lot in
Come on up, join the crowd. See, our mic is on a pivot. I can move it wherever
right
we want.
Right in front of our face. So
But, yeah, so that's the process I'm thinking of. And like I said, I've seen it in kiln drying, and I can't remember what type of wood it is. Like I said, ash pops into mind. And literally, they would steam it to try and straighten it, and it would just start flaking off in these long strips. And I could really imagine you'd be able to process it down into further strips, be able to braid that. And that'd make wicked, like, it would literally be wooden rope.
Yeah.
I think they use the same method for basket weaving and stuff too, just to get the thin layers. You just go with a wider strip, really, is the only true difference there.
Well, yeah, we mentioned at the start that braiding and weaving go very close hand in hand. They're similar skills. Not the same skills, but similar skills. Another one I can think of. No. You know what? I can weave. That's the funny part of this.
It's kind of always been on my to-do list, I guess, but I just never made it there yet.
I've always liked the idea of cattail leaves and weaving.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing is that when they're fresh, they're very flexible. You can shape them. But once they dry, they become very solid, almost hard.
Just hold on a sec there, Ben. This should be this should be bouncing way up here, and it's not for some reason.
I can try switching to a different mic, but I don't.
There, no. Let's. How's that, Steve? Does that sound any better, buddy?
Our official audio tester over here.
Yeah, Steve, he's not afraid to speak up and jump in, so.
No, please. Oh, you guys, yeah, definitely anytime there's anything wrong, you should just be yelling at the boys here to fix it for you.
Yelling?
I mean.
Hey, can you hear me better now?
We've been hearing you fine, yeah. So. I must be a technical issue here. This is the first time for anybody. I'm not wearing my headset. And normally, I keep the headset on, so I'm projecting through my normal speakers. And I did expect some minor setbacks. As anybody knows that has been on this podcast and listened to us from day one, sometimes, anytime Robert touches a setting on this, it's miserable. Like, we are back to square one trying to figure this stuff out. And I bet you what it was just that setting I did there. Probably what you were hearing, Steve, was Ben speaking through the speakers, which was coming through the mic. So I have you switched over to a proper line now. Hopefully that clears things up. What were we talking about?
Weaving. We were kind of going into weaving. I don't know how much further we're going to go.
I don't know anything about weaving. That's all we know collectively about weaving.
So weaving's done. That topic's been covered. Took all of 5 seconds. But I guess getting back to braiding.
That is the first Atlantic bushcraft invention.
So yeah. There are some cordages that are pretty much ready use. And as Mel said, and you said too there, Ben, like spruce root. Spruce root's a great one that's ready use. We actually do have some vines floating around Nova Scotia as well that are ready use, but you got to watch yourself with vines because a lot of stinging, burning, and itchy kind of plants grow on vines unless you really know your vines, because I'm thinking like poison sumac, even poison oak, poison ivy, like they all kind of become viney plants and they look great to use as cordage until you find out that you probably shouldn't use them. Usually you find out not long after you go to the bathroom or rub your eyes. Not gonna lie, that's because most people, like, they have a tolerance to their hands, and it's once those hands start to wander that you realize, you know, you scratch your eye and all of a sudden your whole face breaks out and these blisters and stuff. Oh yeah, it's been there, done that. It's not fun. So I will say there is ready use vines in Nova Scotia, but you really got to know what vines you're going after. You're far better off going for spruce root. And spruce root's great because it's literally ready made. And generally, as it comes out of the ground, if you peel it back, it's right at the right moisture consistency to use. Now, the only edit I would make into that is potentially black spruce root. Sometimes it can get really slimy. Like, it has an outer bark. If you pull that off, it's not too bad, but it's really slimy and hard to work with. But that's the only real one I'd be like, maybe. Little one just walked in, decided to talk to us. We were just worried she was going to run on camera, seeing she's half nude. But anyway, so that's some other things to keep in mind. And if you want to play with cordage, that's a good way to start, is look for some ready-made cordages, because you're going to learn a lot about ready-made cordage. And what Ben and I were talking about before we started this was the spruce root, of course. And we said they used it in the forming of birch bark canoes. And I think you said they would put it on wet and then it would dry. And actually, why don't you say a little bit more about that, Ben? You gave a really good...
I'm by no means an expert on spruce roots as cordage, but I have watched a few videos on it. I've played a little bit with it myself. And one of the things I noted is I watched a guy making a birch bark canoe with it. And of course, everywhere they had to sort of bind it to the frame, they were using birch bark, so they would punch a hole through it and they'd wrap two or three wraps through the same hole and then sort of cinch it off, and they would put it, like, I think usually when I've seen it, they either had it soaking or steamed, and so it went in nice and flexible and they were able to get it really nice and tight, and then as it dried, it kind of locks itself in place and it doesn't come loose unless you're really working it. And then I think they sealed it with a bit of pine pitch, and it creates a very strong, very permanent system on a canoe. So you can imagine that that's very useful for stringing together a few pieces of pole to make like a tripod. You can use it to sort of then hook something in to make it like a fire, you know, over your fire, like holding your pots and stuff. So it's something relatively quick and easy. And I think most bushcrafters can recognize a spruce tree. And so if you recognize a spruce tree, you know the roots are right there, so it's easy enough. You usually push a bit of moss aside, you can usually find a few and pull them up pretty quick, right?
And I've seen people do bow drills with them and have success. I've tried, I've failed, but I know it can be done. Like I said, just a good place for people starting out with cordage, because everybody starts somewhere. It's a good one to start with because they're ready-made. You don't have to do anything else other than recognize the tree and literally uproot some of the roots. And generally, unless you pull a ton of roots, it's not going to be detrimental to the tree to the point of killing it. It might stunt it a little bit until they recover from it, but it won't, once again, unless you destroy the root system. It's not going to cripple the tree too bad if you wanted to gain some cordage that way. In a survival situation, everything's fair, of course. I mean, I'd rather lose a tree than lose a life.
And I've seen with that they've sometimes, especially I think with the slightly bigger ones, or depending on what you're doing, they'll half and even quarter the roots.
Because they're super flexible.
Yeah. So that's a skill set in itself, just learning to split a root so you get a nice even... divide. You just split the end and you work it. And if it starts going too far to one side, you have to sort of put more pressure on the other side to get the crack to move over. You ever seen it done?
Only in videos. Yeah. It's something I've played with varying successes. There's definitely a knack to it. There's a skill to it. Same as when we rode at the waterfall, we were going to split a log, and unfortunately ran out of time, and that's one of the skills I'd like to learn to do too, which you actually have the skill set for, and we're still going to attempt it one of these times. But it all comes back to practice, right? Regardless of what you're going to do, you got to practice these skills. And cordage is a great one, an easy one to practice, because you can practice it not only in the woods, you can practice it at home.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess moving on from the kind of single ply, which is what you're talking about, using kind of a root or whatever, after that, you're looking at, talking about two-ply cordage is when it comes to doing kind of any kind of wrapping technique or cordage making technique with natural materials. So really all that means is that you have two strands. So you're usually looking for, like Steve said here on the comments, you're looking for something with some length. That's definitely your easiest route to take. No pun intended. I didn't mean route, but, and then, really it's just kind of encouraging those two strands to come together. So there's two main hand techniques. One is reverse wrap. So you might hear reverse wrap, you might hear reverse wrap two-ply cordage, even though the two-ply is kind of inferred. And the other technique is like a rolling technique. So I typically do reverse wrap, but rolling technique has its time and place. If you're trying to make any amount of cordage real fast, if you're making really small cordage, or even just to kind of like speed up. If you have really long lengths, you can do it that way. And then you can, within rolling, there's finger rolling or thigh rolling, which is, again, just getting bigger, the kind of bigger body part you use. So it's the same technique. You're just doing it on your leg instead of with your fingers.
And the rolling method, if I'm not mistaken, you're still using the two ply, but you keep them separated. And if this was your thigh, you would have the two strands rolling there, and you keep them separated, and you would literally just roll them over in your hand. So each individual strand is rolling independently of the other one, but ultimately that ends up braiding them together kind of dealio.
Well, it wraps them together. When you talk about braiding, you're talking about three-ply cordage. Yes. So it's braiding and wrapping are two completely separate things. If you want some technical knowledge in your day. But yeah.
Technical.
We're going to witness a man get beat up by his wife.
Verbally.
I'm going to see how far I can push this.
So they were saying you could do it with like any kind of material in home or out in the woods. One of my favorite teaching materials, and Ben will know this because he attended my class, is toilet paper. Because it's so easy to just like super quickly show someone how to do it without having to go out and forage a bunch of leaves, blah, whatever, all the things. So obviously for our podcast people, you can't see what I'm doing. I'll show you here in a second. But I will verbally describe it.
Just build it up a little bit.
So I will, hold on. So the first thing that you want to do when you've collected your two, when you collected your two strands, is to make sure that your two lengths are not the same length. So you do not want them to be ending at the same point because you're going to need to weave in more materials and you don't want to make your joints at the same place. It'll make your cordage much weaker and it'll give you a break point. So the very first thing that you do is really just wrap your cordage until it naturally forms what we call an eye, which is just a little loop. And that's going to be your start point when you make cordage. So from there, if you're doing reverse wrap, you're going to use strand A. You're going to twist away from your body. And then you're going to pull it back over strand B. And then now strand B is your forefront strand. You're going to twist strand B. Bring it back over strand A. So again, A over B, B twist over A. And it's just going to continue like that until you have length. So then eventually you're going to get down to a joint. And one strand is going to run out before your other one. So once you get to that, you're just going to add another piece in. And really all you do is just pinch it together, hold it in your hand when you're doing the wrap, twist towards you, strand B, back over top. And then really that just like locks in your joint for you. And as long as you're keeping them nice and tight, it should look pretty uniform along your entire length. You don't want one piece to be much thinner than the other because you're gonna end up just kind of creating a really weak form of rope. Where it's just kind of really one strand with another strand wrapped around it. You really want to make sure that they wrap together. That's kind of your main key. For the rolling technique, again, you can do a finger roll. This is the exact same.
Before we proceed on, I had a question on this.
Yeah.
Just because it's a question that I get a lot when it comes to cordage. Because that's the way I join my pieces together too. And this is specifically on joining cordage.
Yeah.
I wrap mine together and keep going. A lot of people, when you have your ends... I can't shorten one finger up more than the other. But anyway, if this was one of your sides, they take the other one and they just lay it in and then braid the rope across, which leaves all these little nubs sticking out, which is completely acceptable. A lot of survival schools and stuff do teach that method. Why would you not do that, Melissa? There is a right answer.
I don't know. I think they're just trying to pull the tension back the other way.
So the classic answer to that question is if you leave, the reason they do that is because it does actually show you where the joints are in your rope.
Oh, I guess, yeah.
So you do have a visual representation of where the joint is. I'm not
usually looking for the joints in my rope, to be honest.
The problem with putting it out is it gives you a place to snag and unravel your rope.
Yeah.
So it's a double-edged sword. So for beginners, it's not bad to leave it out because you get to see where your joints are when your rope inevitably fails, because it will fail at some point. You get to see where it's split apart and where you can re-braid in. As you get better at the skill and you progress further down, you may want to hide those ends in because you'll get a little bit more durability out of your rope, because as you're using it and you're twisting it and you're rolling it and stuff like that, those ends won't fetch up. Think of it as like the old-fashioned rope you used to get around burns, and you know about this stuff, Ben. As it splinters and the end fingers and stuff come out, they'll just continue to work their way out and your rope just goes to snot, to the point where, yeah, it's technically still rope, but it's basically unusable. You know what I mean? It's like trying to tie something up with a rat's nest, and it just doesn't work. So by keeping your ends tucked in, you get a much cleaner rope that won't fray out as much, but you got to be a lot more determined and sure of your skills in doing it.
I think I would definitely end up going cutting those tags off.
Well, see, that's the problem. If you cut those tags off, you make a weak spot. You have to braid them in. So you can cut them off, once again, but they're still where they're singled out. Unless you can somehow get it below the surface of the rope to completely cover that tag end in, it still creates a chafe point or a pick point, if you will.
So, anyway, Melissa, how strong is toilet paper rope?
I'm getting there. It's coming along.
So,
how strong is it now?
It can be pretty strong. I mean, it depends on your ply, too, sometimes. And the little perforations for the rips can be tricky. You can get like almost like a really good rope going and then just like snaps off because it hits the perforation just right, but it's a bit of a challenge.
So while Mel works on hers, I'll give you a story, Ben. Ben, you know where I work. I don't publicize where I work because it's nobody needs to know that, and it's kind of it's not secretive, but it's semi-secretive. But anyway, in my line of work, there are people that are really good at making rope, as you can imagine, and they're very good at making it out of toilet paper. Funny enough, we had individuals make toilet paper rope exactly as Mel was doing here out of single ply toilet paper. You're talking about like, you know, industrial grade toilet paper, single ply. This stuff literally was scraped off the tree and thrown on a roll. Not high quality stuff. Anyway, they managed to braid this stuff up once with the reverse two ply wrap like Mel's doing here beside me. Then they would go it over a second time and they would actually have this strong enough they could make workout equipment out of it. So they would have 50 pounds plus on these things to use as dumbbells. They would braid handles into other pieces of equipment to give them functionality that the equipment originally didn't have. Like, you can actually hold a lot of strength on this. We tested the best rope we found out, or found. We have tested, and its breaking strength was right at about 200 pounds.
There you go.
Like that's pretty impressive.
That's incredibly impressive for toilet paper. And honestly, Buddy said he threw it together in about 20 minutes. And if he had had more time and you know, was allowed to continue, he probably could have done it better. So.
Well, now I know what I have to look to work towards.
Yeah. And he like he made 10 feet of this stuff in literally 10, like,
hang off this
10 minutes. Done. So, but anyway.
So I'm expecting at the end of the show you'll have enough rope to tie Robert up.
That's a different podcast.
That's a different podcast, Ben. That's the After Hours podcast. When the Bears in the commercial says it's strong. When the Bears in the commercial says it's strong. And yeah, I mean, all joking aside, that's the thing. It comes down to the quality of your braid. Like, take a little bit of time. Not your braid, your wrap. Take a little bit of time as you're doing your wrap. And keep it neat and keep it even. That's what this individual was saying. Like, the more even you can keep your wraps, the more strength you're going to get out of it. Because the more inconsistencies you have, the more weak points you have.
Every inconsistency is a weak point, to be honest.
Yeah. So, in case anyone's looking, it's Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures After Hours.
We're not ready to go live with that site yet.
Cordage takes a whole new meaning. yeah. Oh, look at that. See, just like that, it'll just pop. It'll get you every time. But.
So we do have some reverse two-ply cordage wrapped up here.
Anyways.
That Mel has done.
Here it comes. Hold on.
And I mean, it to be fair.
Pretty. Here
I'm not going to lie. This fluffier toilet paper isn't as good as the single ply.
I had one really gnarly joint. You can see it there. Of course, I was going really fast. But I braided it back in. So. Yeah. It's actually really strong. Okay, I'm actually gonna pull. There we go. It popped. But like it's good.
I mean, if you were to use that to tie up a piece of rope and you doubled or tie up a piece of wood for like a lean-to shelter, the downfall of toilet paper, of course,
would not use toilet paper to do anything.
Any amount of water is definitely gonna wreck it. But realistically,
great for practice.
Yeah, it's great for practice. But even at the strength it was. You put two or three wraps around a piece of wood, you could make that in shelter building. You know what I mean? Just at the strength that was at.
I was really impressed with how strong we could get grass. Especially I found like the long, the stock, the seeded stock, the round piece. I've played with that a fair bit. And it's you can get, if you get a couple of layers on that, it's strong enough that when you try to break it, it cuts into your hand. Before it breaks.
I'd say the grasses are probably my favorite thing to work with.
Because they're readily available.
Yeah.
And if you get around a beach, like a sandy area, the crabgrass that comes down there, the long blades, a little harder on the finger to roll.
It will cut you. See?
But if you can get some rope made out of that stuff is amazingly strong. What are you doing out of bed again there, Bigwig?
I want to do the
kind of
fireworks.
Okay,
bud. The little one wants to watch fireworks. But, yeah, so if anybody gets out around, like, where I'm thinking here is Melmurby Beach has tons of crabgrass, and it's harmless, but you can make some wicked rope out of crabgrass, and I mean strong rope, strong enough that I used it to, what did I use it to tie up? I actually used it to tie up somebody's exhaust. That's what it was, literally. On the run repair, don't get me wrong, it only lasted maybe like 20 minutes, but it was enough to get them up the road. That's all they had to do. They had to get to the end of the road to get to where somebody could, you know, wire it up properly or repair it properly, whatever you want to say. But anyway, it was literally just some crabgrass, reverse twisted ply, and it held up the exhaust. And I mean, exhausts aren't heavy, but they're not necessarily light. I think it was like around the midpipe or something. But anyway, it did the job is the case in point here. So what you got going there for us now, Melly?
Okay. So, like I said, I typically do reverse wrap. So there is a rolling technique. I'm not the best, but I can show you. So, so finger rolling. So you're going to start again with your eye and your two lengths. You're going to roll it together. Now, for your finger wrapping, you just kind of, finger wrapping, you just push it along your finger so that the two, I already messed it up. You want to keep your two strands separate, and you're kind of simultaneously rolling them both. And then as you do that, you release your top end where your eye is, and it twists itself. So again, you're going to roll away from yourself on your finger. It makes it really tight,
I'm keeping them separate, know, just right? for demonstration
purposes. The toilet paper, also this one requires usually a lot of hand moisture to do, and my hands are dry, and the toilet paper is literally the worst material for this technique. But again, so rolling, and then releasing, and it'll twist itself. Wow, I twisted it, but you're welcome. And then again, but on your thighs, it's you would do it with like two really long, thin strands, usually grasses, and the really thin stalks and rushes that you strip out of. Those ones, the really long ones, are really good for thigh rolling because you just put it on your thigh, keep your two strands separate, roll them both simultaneously, and then release with the hand holding, and it'll twist. So then you just grab, pull it back up on your thigh, push those two until they get really tight, and then release. So it really does the twisting for you. It can be a much faster method, like I said, with the really long materials and with the thinner materials. With anything really thick, you're definitely want to go reverse wrap to at least get it started, because you're just going to drive yourself crazy trying to get it going.
Maybe it's called razor grass.
Oh, I should also say, I always call it reverse wrap, but some people may hear it as rope lay. That's the other term. It's the exact same thing. Rope lay or reverse wrap, same technique. Finger rolling or thigh rolling, same technique. So, just in case you hear those terms.
Open a new tab. There we go. So we did have a comment in there. I called it crabgrass, and the comment was, must be different names from Virginia. You're probably, I guess the correct name for it is razor grass. That's probably what you're going to be looking at. It's a long, thin, bladed grass, and it literally, the name razor grass is quite fitting because it can so cut sharp. You. I guess locally we always call it crabgrass kicking around here, but you are correct. The technical name of that is razor grass. I had to look it up to be sure, but I did. I looked it up.
So just sort of kind of asking here, like grass kind of has that natural barb. Like you can rub grass one way, it's usually pretty smooth. If you rub it the other way, it'll actually dig in quite hard. Mm-hmm. Does that kind of help lock it in place a bit better over some of the other materials?
Yeah, a lot of the natural materials that have kind of that fibrous barb to it, it definitely can help kind of hold the tension for your twist, for sure.
Now, a material I love to use, but it's incredibly hard to find in Nova Scotia, but you can find it. It's mullein. You can take the stalk out of a mullein, you can tap it, and it'll actually come out in long, fibrous pieces. And man, it makes wicked rope. But it like, I can think of five places in Nova Scotia I've seen mullein. But I know you can get it. And for some of our sawgrass, yeah, and maybe that's another name, Patrick, I'm not sure. But razor grass is what I looked up. I know down south, you can get a plant called yucca.
Yeah.
Is that it? Yucca? Yucca is an amazing natural
agave
fiber.
Agave well in the southern...
Is that the one where when you take like the spike off the end of the leaf?
Yep, and it comes out with a strand. It's basically a natural needle. You can sew up clothes and stuff with it. Yeah. That's a yucca plant.
Yeah, that does not grow here.
No. You're getting down into probably like Arizona and stuff like that to get yucca, I think. But I have seen yucca. I have traveled to southern states. Southern states for me. And I have seen yucca, and it's an amazing plant. At the time, it was all only pointed out to me. I didn't really acquire any yucca because I imagine they would not let me take it back across the border or any of that. But I've heard it's like from videos I've seen. And Mitch Mitchell is the one I'm thinking of. He can do some amazing stuff, and he's just down in I think he's in the upper states, Mitch Mitchell?
Yeah. And hi, Mitch. We love you.
He does what? I'm hopefully sure he watches.
He might see it.
I talk to him from time to time. He has done some cordage videos on yucca, and it's just an amazing plant. So any of our U.S. counterparts down there, if you happen to find a yucca plant and you're interested in cordage, you have found a gold mine there. Those things are amazing for cordage making. That was my rant.
I mean, that's pretty much everything there is to know baseline on
natural, that's a good entry into it.
Material cordage wrapping. After that, you're basically talking about
film
synthetic cordage. Oh, Yucca filamentosa.
grows here. I'm a professional gardener. There you go. Patrick, send me some yucca. We can both go to jail when it crosses the border. But no, honestly, the basics of cordage making, the basics are easy. It is a ridiculously hard skill to master and get really good at, and it only comes with tons of practice. And like Mel said, a lot of her skills come from probably braiding and stuff like that. Oh, did you want to talk about like 3-ply braids or anything like that? Or
I mean, that's braiding, getting into advanced plating, whichever way you want to call it, and that's a whole other technique. It's braiding. I can show you if you don't know what
I was going to say. The only time I've ever seen braiding used in cordage is when you're using like what we call popple here, poplar. It's actually a trembling aspen or a silver aspen or something like that. The young of that, you can actually shell out the outer bark and split it, and you can do a 3-ply braid onto that, which is what I've just a basic braid as far as I ever knew it. And it will come out to a rope material. It's great when it's green. Once it dries, it doesn't hold up that well, unfortunately.
Yeah. Again, you just start with an eye. You add your third strand after that, typically. If you're making cordage, obviously, if you're braiding hair, that's a whole other process.
She's making tassels for the after hours show.
Oh, see, look, this is what happens sometimes. You get just a disaster when your toilet paper rips and flies across the room. All right, so try that again. Here's your three pieces, and then so this one is a technique where you usually secure your eye. You don't try to hold it and work with it at the same time. Whereas the other ones, you usually are holding your eye and then twisting. For braiding, you want to secure your eye and work off of it. So then it's just strand B over strand A, and then strand A comes up over C, C goes up over A over B, do, 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 and you just crisscross until you have a plait or a braid. So there's also, there's 4-strand plaiting, there's 5-strand plaiting. And then there's a whole bunch of other, I mean, the friendship bracelet, different techniques you can do. I mean, buy yourself a book designated for, you know, 15-year-old friendship bracelet makers, and you can find yourself a whole wide variety of braids and kind of string interlocking. But, so that's your main one. Yeah, you have single strand, so you'd have roots and things you can use in their natural state by themselves. You'd have 2-ply, which is either reverse wrap or a rolling technique. You'd have 3-strand, which is plaiting or braiding. And then after that, you're getting crazy.
So, just going to throw this out because it came to me while you were talking earlier. An awesome tool to keep in your pack for this is a safety pin.
Oh, totally.
So I've often seen people, especially... They safety pin it to their pants, and they work from there. So they get a nice secure location to sort of work away from when you're doing like a braid and all that. Like,
yeah, so, it's definitely one of the handiest things you can have. I mean, I've done it where you're like crouching and then you just like pin the eye with your foot. And then, you know, you're kind of in this little Gollum from Lord of the Rings pose while you
braid. Francis wants her own rope.
So, I mean, if you want to be more comfortable than that, then yeah, either safety pinning it or you can even sometimes you can just like hook it on a little stub on the tree and start off from that. Once you get going, it's not so bad. You can kind of just lock it really anywhere. Even like sometimes you can use your pinky fingers. Once you get longer, you just kind of lock it between your pinky fingers, and then you use, you know, the forefinger and the thumb to continue your braid. But yeah, to get it started, anything that you can carry that you can secure it to, and a safety pin is definitely the go-to for the...
I'm not going to lie. Like after 3-ply braiding, no good for me. But what I use is I use it in between my toes a lot.
Yeah,
like I'll lock it in between my big toe and whatever, and that's how I lock it in, because generally when I'm doing 3-ply braiding, I'm using larger materials. Because the thing with 3-ply braiding is it's a little easier on the material itself. Potentially, depending on the materials, you lose a little strength out of it. I mean, if you have really good materials and you 3-ply braid it, you're going to get a really strong rope. But the benefit of the 3-ply is it's a little bit more delicate on the materials you're using. That's why I said you can get away with using popple or aspen bark or something like that, because it's a little bit more delicate and you're just kind of folding it over itself instead of wrapping it together.
Yeah.
So you're getting that 3-ply strength without any of the damage and rolling and stuff. But unfortunately, the rolling and stuff adds a ton of strength to it as well.
That's the thing. The problem is that if your individual strands aren't by themselves strong enough, plating them together really isn't going to increase your strength enough. You're just going to end up snapping kind of each individual strand once you apply the weight to it if it's not strong enough. So that's why, and you can reverse wrap some cordage and then braid that cordage together. I've definitely used that technique. And it, you know, you're getting the strength of the reverse wrap in your raw material, and then you're using that decent cordage to make thicker, stronger cordage. So that's kind of where it comes into when I usually use it like that, yeah.
Well, yeah, I think that's...
I don't know anything about... I forgot the exact same word last time I was on the podcast. Rope.
Knots?
Nope. The certain kind of rope that everyone uses and thinks they're so
paracord?
Cool.
Paracord?
Paracord. Jeez Louise, what is my problem? It was the exact same word I forgot last time I was on the podcast. For whatever reason, paracord is something I know nothing about, but it has, like, all those fibrous strands, and it has a wrap around it. And if you look at the actual way that it's made, it's interesting, but I don't know anything about its tensile strengths and things.
Now, 550 is supposed to have 550 pounds, and 710 is supposed to have 710, but you'll find that paracord stretches, and it binds in water.
So, yeah, unpopular opinion of the day is paracord sucks.
Paracord has its uses. It's better than nothing, but it's not the almighty rope that it has been made out to be. And yeah, here's Atlantic Bushcraft's unpopular opinion. Paracord's not bad, but it's nowhere near as good as what it's been made out to be. It is not the miracle rope that it has been made to be in other places, and I'm not going to name names or point fingers because everybody's entitled to their opinion. But I have found that the stretching property and the binding property of paracord makes it kind of a nuisance, and its deteriorating effect, if it's left out for any amount of time, it starts to, like, unless you get really good paracord, and then, you know, that's going to be debatable and all that out there, but the general paracord that the average person buys will start to deteriorate and powder away after extended periods of UV damage.
I was doing some work in my backyard this week, and one of the things I found is I need it to increase the strength of my pull. So I ran it through a couple of loops and pulled like a pulley system, which you can get away with a lot of ropes. And I found that the paracord almost instantly cut itself off.
Yeah, and it probably would, because paracord will cut itself pretty easy too with any kind of binding strength against it.
Yeah. So a lot of other ropes will actually slide against themselves without doing much damage. They can handle that. Paracord, with the type of weave it is actually quite abrasive to itself and other objects if you pull it around. And the stretch, like the first length, because I was trying to put some pressure on a tree so I could cut it and make sure it fell where I needed it to. And it was the only rope I could easily find at the time, because a lot of my rope is just not where it's supposed to be right now. And as such, I had a fair bit of trouble and ended up, it was useless for what I needed it. It's great. In fact, the outer jacket's usable for something. Each of the individual strands can be used for something different. But honestly, I'd much rather take the rope meant for what I need than one rope hoping it does a whole bunch of jobs okay. That's my unpopular opinion of the day.
I don't think it's unpopular, though, is the problem. I think the more people used it, the thing with, and this is my 2 cents on my 2 cent rant on paracord. At the time, it went through like wildfire until people really started using it for more and more things, and then they learned the kind of shortcomings off it. So I think it's just now that it's been out there, it went through its real popular phase, and it's kind of on the decline a little bit. I don't think it's unpopular anymore. There are better ropes out there. You mentioned Amsteel. That's a great one. I mean, it's an amazing rope. It's a little bit expensive, but I mean, it's an amazing rope.
I'm now seeing it's easier to get like on Amazon and stuff, and actually decent prices, but you're buying like 300 feet at a time.
Yeah. And I mean, some people may not want that kind of length, but at the same time, you know what? Buy 300 feet. Most people buy paracord at 100 foot lengths, and I used to carry three rolls of that in my bag. Yeah. So, I mean...
Yeah, if I had a choice between 100 feet of paracord and 100 feet of Amsteel, I'm going to tell you 100% of the time what I'm going with. It's going to be the Amsteel.
Steve says he bought a lot of local rope, actually not a lot of paracord. And you know what, Steve? Not missing anything. And there's some gimmicky paracords out there that are okay-ish. You and I have talked about that one, that like the strands inside, one's a fishing line, one's fire. Like there's some cool things that come with it. Don't get me wrong. It's just not the best all-around rope you can get. As Ben said, I would much rather run in the woods with 100 feet of Amsteel than with 100 feet of paracord.
Yeah, well, the same size Amsteel, I'm going to be able to easily pick up 2,000 pounds, and the stretch is, like, minimal in comparison.
Oh, there's notes now.
You're good.
All right. But anyway, we kind of talked about our paracord. We talked about cordage in general. We're coming up on our hour. I think we've kind of... have you checked out survival paracord? Patrick yes. just mentioned out. And yeah, we have actually checked out several different types of paracord. Actually, I think, can you look right on that shelf there, Mel, and see if there is a red and black paracord with a fancy band around it? It's actually the stuff we were just talking about that has all the different strands and stuff inside it.
Just a reminder so that you remember what to
say. See, and the thing I love about it is you do get a lot of stuff in one package. But the thing I kind of don't like about it is you basically degrade it or damage it to get each of those items.
Yeah. And this is the survival paracord that I was talking about there. Show links for the Amsteel. Amsteel, correct me if I'm wrong, is a brand name?
Yeah.
And we're running... I think it's actually Nomex cord is what it technically is. Nomex.
No, not Nomex. It's not Nomex.
I can't remember the material it is. But anyway, well, Ben's looking it up there.
Dyneema.
That's it. This is the survival paracord, and that's actually a brand name. We have no affiliation with them. And it's good cordage, don't get me wrong. I have nothing bad to say about this cordage other than it does suffer from the same shortfalls that we've always already mentioned. It does stretch. It does cut into itself, but this is the stuff. Is there a knife right there, Melly? There must be 100 friggin' knives there. Very top.
Sir, I just sent you a link. You can flick it up there.
There are four to choose
from. They call it a UHM WPE, strong, lightweight, blue rope. 7/64 thickness, has just shy of 2,000 pounds of strength.
Is that a wrapped? It is.
Yep. So, yeah, this is what we're talking about when we say Amsteel. Not like I said, Amsteel itself is technically a brand name, so it's kind of like Kleenex and tissue paper. Kleenex is a brand name. Tissue paper is the actual product. Amsteel is a brand name. This is the actual product. So yeah, sorry, we are using them interchangeably, and I do apologize for that.
So but, you can get different thicknesses. Obviously, the thicker, the stronger. And there's a couple other brand names you also hear. Lash It and Slash It, or Sling It. Lash It and Sling It, I think it are the two names. And that stuff's much thinner. Again, amazing strength, like 200-300 pounds or 500 pounds for stuff that's not much bigger than thread. It's a hollow braid rope, which means you can kind of squeeze it together and then run it through itself, which is how it's used for the...
Oh, I actually have some of that tiny, tiny stuff. I showed it to you before. It's like, oh gosh, it's 16th thick and rated for 2,000 pounds or something. I don't believe that 2,000 pound rating, but it is strong as heck. I will tell you that much.
I think the stuff I had was over 400 pounds, and it was the same idea, like really thin. And I have a roll of silver. It's silver when I have, and it's generally in my pack when I go somewhere.
Done. Yeah, Steve, that's the stuff.
Yeah.
And to answer your question there, Patrick, because I got it all splayed out here pretty now. So yeah, that's the survival paracord. It's got the different types of strands in there, like these three over here. One is fishing line, one is sewing thread, one's fire cord, and then you got your five strands of actual inner cord. And then the outer cord has some other neat features to it. And yeah, we have heard and tried the survival paracord. When Noah Nell joins? Oh, do you mean Melissa, my wife, Pat? But yeah, anyway, that's that. But yeah, the Amsteel, as we were calling it, it's a great type of cordage. And as I was telling Ben there, I do have some of it. It's about the size of Bankline is what it is. Maybe a touch bigger than Bankline, but it is ridiculously strong stuff. And I mean, I put a stick around it and I could hold my weight up, and I'm not a light guy. Like, I'm 300 plus pounds on a good day. And I mean, I can hold my weight on it and it's not budging. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Did you send me another link there, Ben?
Yeah, that one's actually the Amsteel brand. Same thing. 600 foot spool. It's $310 bucks. So, like, I've bought it from a local vendor here, Binnacles. Binnacles is usually charging around 50 cents to a dollar a foot, depending on thickness and stuff, to the stuff I've been looking at. 69 cents was a pretty common one I think I was buying at. So that's pretty expensive. But some of these others, you're basically dealing with the same stuff. It's definitely worth it. You also find this stuff used in winches when they don't want to use the steel cable.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is actually what I'm running, specifically this black one. Mine's gray in color, but yeah. I don't know, I guess my cursor's not coming up. But anyway, that black one you see down there is the exact same synthetic winch rope I run in my ATV.
Yeah. The beauty of that stuff in an ATV is if it does ever break, unlike the steel cable that's most likely going to cut through you if you're in the path, this stuff slows down significantly faster and holds a lot less weight. So it'll probably bruise you. It may very well cut you, but it's not going to most likely kill you. It's safer.
And that's fair. But yeah, so coming up an hour and 10 minutes, I think that's kind of a good place to end on cordage. Do you not think, Ben?
Yeah.
So before we do leave here tonight, we do want to invite our listeners. As we said at the start, we're going to do a 2-minute and 15 moment of silence for the indigenous children that were discovered there in BC. If anybody is still new to that, we definitely encourage you to take a look into the news on that. There's tons of information and stuff out about there. But yeah, so Ben, you have the floor, buddy. You tell us when to start and we'll go for it.
Let's start now. And it's done.
All right. We'd like to thank everybody that actually, you know, hung on and took part in that with us. Once again, please, we encourage everybody to go out there and, you know, get yourself familiarized with what's going on, because it's definitely something that everybody should be aware of.
Yeah, thank you everyone for helping us honor the unceded territory of the Mi'kma'ki, and also the memories of the 215 children that were discovered here in Canada.
Yeah, it's a horrible thing, and we really have no words. But we're looking forward to seeing everyone hopefully next week. We'll have a new topic, a new discussion. Like we say, get out there and explore, do things. The province is finally opening up, so we have some opportunities there. So, see you all next week, hopefully.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone. Thanks again for having me.